I mean, I've always spent, as I say, most of my time doing work, and if I try and recall my domestic situation or kind of personal things, quite often it's a blur.
Okay.
Because actually, I wasn't focused on that at all. I wasn't thinking about that very much. But you know, I can reel off, you know, shows and, you know, do all the kind of work stuff.
Mm.
And I almost kind of construct everything on that basis. And I've sort of disappeared somewhere, you know. So I sort of personally don't appear in my own sort of history. I just pop up in shows. But I think one of the big differences, I mean, of course, I do think I wouldn't be doing, as I say, I'm just kind of repeating myself really, but I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now if I hadn't kind of, worked on it then. I couldn't have afforded to have done it. And it sort of enabled, and in a way I felt a lot richer then. I could have a meeting between people and meet every Wednesday or something, you know, and slowly put something together.
Mm.
So the first shows I did, if the cat fits or kind of invisible work, they were done over, you know, a year. I would rework them, try things out, play with them, talk to either Julian or Caroline about those things, and develop it slowly. And now, of course, you know, if you get a grant and you're paying people specifically for doing a job, that, you know, you're paying them by the week, and so it sort of, you can't meet every Wednesday, you know, you have to kind of use that week efficiently, and so it just, that kind of process changes just by the funding. So actually I feel poorer with funding in a way than I did without it. Of course, I couldn't have carried on without the funding, but it felt like that to some extent. And I think one of the things, you know, also at that time is that there was quite a healthy arts centre circuit, you know. So there was, so the ICA was showing live work. There was Cardiff was showing live work. There was a little kind of circuit, you know. So you could tour around, and most art galleries had a sort of theatre of sorts attached, and I would kind of tour in those places. And those places, on the whole, have all gone now.
Mm.
And there's a kind of certain point around about sort of, actually does coincide more or less with moving out of that area, kind of coincidentally, really, that most of the live work, most of the stage work that I was doing fell off. Because there was no longer really a place for it. There was a kind of point when the Arts Council was funding Beau Gamelin Ensemble and Station House Opera and me as theatre.
Mm.
And then someone, you know, looked at us and looked at that and decided we weren't. So there was other kind of categories, attempts to sort of say what we were. And then it was called Combined Arts, and then it was called something else. But anyway, we were all kind of pushed out. But those things, that, you know, those things change. So I've been struggling ever since to try and find a way of, you know, either doing kind of video installation or kind of small scale things in galleries, or, you know, trying to find another way of doing it. But in a way that circuit, that, you know, what was building up at the time, and you know, people like Rose English were kind of very kind of active then too, and there was quite a lively area, that sort of small scale theatre, you know, whatever you call it, performance area, and there was interest in the hybrid and, you know, crossing boundaries, and we were all sort of operating in and around art schools, but there was people coming in from different directions, and I quite liked that kind of mixture of different things coming in. But that's really changed now. It's no longer like that.
Because also, like what you were saying about living in Leytonstone, it kind of seemed to give you a luxury of time, in a way.
Yeah, because, I mean, I think we were all living like kids, really. I mean, none of us were having kind of children, and the only person who had a child had a disabled child, and so, you know, I think that we were all pretty reluctant, but. That made us even more inclined not to do it. So none of us were living, sort of, none of us were wanting kids. We were all That was another way we were supporting one another, or not supporting one another, depending on your point of view. Our model was being an artist, and that, you know, that meant you didn't, you know, you weren't measuring success by kids and houses and cars, and that you were measuring success by a kind of, you know, respect and interest in this peculiar activity.
So, like, because I remember your work at the Slade, which was very formal. And then, what period? When did you start doing? When did kind of all that slapstick comedy stuff come into your work? I missed that.
It was funny because it's always it curious me. It was there hiding, actually, always. So I'd gone through Goldsmiths and the Slade, not doing any performance, but I'd been very interested in it. But I was sort of making films and doing various bits and pieces and doing installations and lots of it. Lots of the stuff I was doing was describing performance events.
Yeah.
I learned a lot about how not to make a film. Actually, I've still got a suitcase of old bits of film, 16mm film, which cost me a fortune.
Yeah.
But it never quite got to be a film. Partly because I would shoot very wide shots for as long as the film lasted. You know, there was lots of people shooting, you know, the kind of truth to the materials sort of idea that you shoot for as long as the film lasted. And I'd do take after take of, you know, some elaborate thing that I'd set up. But really what I was doing is I was filming a sort of staged thing. And it might be in a park, but it was still a sort of staged thing. And so I kind of slowly learned that, I actually didn't have much of a feeling for film, you know, I didn't. And as soon as I left the Slade, I did a funny show for the Slade. I did a sculpture show that I hadn't done at all during the, and I did it as a kind of joke, really. And it was a complete surprise. I know, I've never done that before, you know, before or this or since, but at the same time I was showing fragments of films. There was a long monologue that I was doing, and actually the monologue was something I was going to give to Julian Maynard Smith to do, because I really didn't think of myself as a performer, and I'd always sort of hated performance, really, hated the idea of me doing performance. You know, I was much too sort of obsessive, and didn't dream that I would be a performer. Although I was at school doing lots of karate, so I was quite fit at the time. Mm. When I left, I think that's Minna coming in. You might as well switch it off for a sec. Okay, I think I can pick up where I left off. I left the Slade, and I was talking to Julian Maynard Smith about doing this monologue, and he was doing his shows. He was doing a new show called Ultra Mundane, and doing a kind of revival of something called Sex and Death, and he wanted a performer, and he asked me if I wanted to be in it, and we sort of swapped each other, you know, because neither of us had any money. So he did something for me, and I did something for him. And it's sort of a relationship that I've sort of kept all these years.
Because actually, you mentioned obsessive qualities, and they're absolutely ideal for a performer, really.
Well, it was quite interesting, this idea of being able to. I mean, it was very much part of the, you know, of the time, really, that I could work obsessively on something, on some structure, make it very, very carefully, and there was no object in the end. You know, it had a brief life, so it was kind of ephemeral. So it was rather like making a sort of very elaborate firework and then lighting it. You know, it's sort of somehow there was no trace of it. Once it had gone, and at the time, I quite liked that idea. You know, I destroyed my Goldsmith's degree show. I didn't keep any of it. You know, I just broke it all up and took it. But now, of course, you know, in my sort of 50s, I'm sort of, you know, someone says, and what do you do? Just a bugger. You know, I wish I had some kind of record of it, or I wish I'd kind of kept a more, you know, a better kind of document of these things. But that was very, much of the time, you know, that no one wanted to make kind of commodities, no one was interested in commodities. It didn't actually come up really. But everyone was interested in minimal conceptual things, and you know, if you did a good show, that never meant that you'd sold anything. And everyone, I think, if people had sold something, they would have been looked at with some suspicion. There's something wrong with that somehow.
Mm. Yeah, because it was very thinking based, wasn't it? The kind of intellectual side.
It was linked to philosophy at the time. Mm. Now it's linked to fashion more.
Yeah, I think so too, actually.
It's certainly not linked to philosophy.
And also, people were very particular about documenting their work. They've always got evidence of the work. That was something that came up, Terry Smith mentioned actually as well. And you mentioned about Philibrook Road as well. What was Grove Green Road like when you was there? Because you mentioned in Philibrook Road you was there when demolitions were taking place. Was Grove Green Road after Philibrook Road?
No, I moved in. So I moved with Minna into Grove Green Road.
Yeah.
And spent some years there, and they were nice and quiet. Really, they were. You know, it was rather like kind of boring living, but boring living in a nice way. You know, it was enjoyable and. It was the first time, really, that I'd had a kind of proper model of you know, how most people would live in a house, and then that went bung, and there was a kind of moment of absolute kind of chaos after that, and then I went into Philibrook Road as a kind of. Kind of retreat.
Do you think that, like, looking back, that anything in that environment has an effect on the work that you were making?
Yes and no, I suppose. I mean, I've never actually sort of done anecdotal things, although lots of people think that I do. You know, people are endlessly saying that would make a good performance, some sort of absurd thing they've observed. But I've never actually done anything like that. But I suppose the kind of short-term provisional nature of it, you know, it kind of enabled lots of things and lots of activities. And there was something about that kind of stripped back, dilapidated environment that produced lots of work that was a bit the same. It was. I suppose it's all kind of related to kind of, you know, art bavura, sort of, you know, idea where you're kind of making something with impoverished means, or kind of, you know, it's kind of poor, but it's, you know, from that you can make something that's kind of rich and interesting. And I think everybody felt that. And if it had a kind of politics, that it was kind of in that sort of area that you were sort of making something with limited means.
And I also thought that piece that you did years later called Slow Life made me think about those houses, actually, because I know some of them, like just sort of some of the staircase pieces, and people coming slowly down, moving so slowly, but just sort of almost like a freeze. Maybe because I saw those houses as like all working spaces, and you've got projections of these interiors which are like working spaces and lived spaces at the same time.
Well, it was that. I mean, that was done in January 2003. It was shot the end of the previous year. And I was living in Manor House here, at that time. Well, one of the interiors is this room that we're recording in.
I thought it looked familiar.
But I actually shot other people in it. Normally, I shot. I was kind of interested to shoot real people in their own home, and it started off being a bit like that. But I didn't want the piece to be about sort of happy families. So there's a number of them where you can't quite tell what's going on. There's two people passing each other on the stairs. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't quite know whether they live with one another, whether they're lodgers, whether, you know, what they are in relation to one another. And that was me and Julian, actually. And I quite like the contrast of showing something in a sort of minimal light industrial sort of art space, featureless art space, and then have this. You know, domestic spaces just look extraordinary in that environment. You know, they look somehow strangely excessive, and so it's quite nice. You know, just seeing colours and cushions and curtains in these places. And really, it was a radical shift for me because I'd always done stage shows. I'd kind of like that kind of staging, and in a way, I'd always had a trouble with the image. You know, and the great thing about sort of doing live performance is it's not an image. I mean, it wasn't primarily a visual image for me. It was a kind of sculptural thing. It was a kind of an encounter. It wasn't something that had a kind of clearly defined boundary or kind of outline. It was, you know, it was a kind of complex kind of object. And one of the things I liked about Slow Life was this kind of slow slippage of movement. So there was something about the creaking, cracking furniture and this movement that sort of attacked or undermined the idea of the still image, although that was the still image was the kind of norm that it was kind of playing with.
Yeah, and also somehow it brings forward this kind of house as a dysfunctional space in a way that where you're not sure if people are actually engaging or, as you say, what's kind of the interplay is within the house. So it's got a kind of very weird.
Yeah. Well, I quite like doing is making sort of models of something that really don't tell you about life. They're not really about life. They're just they're curious kind of objects. And it was important to me that it was recorded real time, and they were performing very slowly. They were just performing simple actions that normally would take about sort of 30 seconds, but it took half an hour to pass a glass of wine or go out of the door. Or so a glance would turn into a long look, or you know, someone would hold something for a very long time. So that notion of intention or reading someone's mind from their behaviour gets kind of thwarted because you can't quite tell what's going on in the mind of someone that's doing something that slowly. But they're kind of concentrating hard, and they're not trying to look like it's slowed down film. They're trying to look like at any moment they're completely stable, and they're sort of at rest, you know, everywhere in that journey. So it's rather like they're either kind of preoccupied or absent minded, and you can't tell which one it is. But there is a sort of isolating effect that has. But I did want the most of the actions in it are a kind of encounter at some point between two people or three. You know, there's a meeting of some sort that then goes away again. So there's something about that kind of crossing over a bit. But you know, there is anxiety in it because it's kind of slowly slipping. But I also quite like the idea that my idea. You know, if someone said, you know, what's heaven like? You know, what's the best thing can happen? And you know, it's not going to be, you know, your wedding day or kind of a big event. It would be a kind of unremarkable event, you know. So there's something about that, just living in a place, an unremarkable thing, extended, that becomes remarkable because that's all you've got. You know, it's those kind of things that you don't record. It's the kind of incidental things of life passing a, you know, cup of tea to someone.
I mean, do you think, when you look back at Leytonstone, do you think there was anything remarkable there?
Back, it's gone. I mean, what's remarkable about it now is that way of life has absolutely gone.
Mm.
You know, every bit of property that was available for some kind of creative intervention or some kind of short moment of something kind of peculiar is gone, and everything's turned into kind of expensive flats, or, you know, it's been sewn up in some way. So it's a kind of, definitely a way of life that's kind of been erased, really.
Mm. And, I mean, I know you sort of, what did you think, you know, in terms of the protesters, because that was extraordinary. Like, in your street, there were tree houses and chainsaws going on and all that.
Well, as I say, I mean, we were all very sympathetic, of course, and we were supposed allies in all this. You know, we didn't want the road to go through. But it was a kind of problem because, you know, what I was saying about that sort of emotional investment, they had none.
Mm.
They'd kind of moved in to do this thing, and that, you know, so that was that. But we'd actually lived there and had a community there in some ways, and it was tough. It was tough. You know, we weren't kind of being as militant as these people. You know, we were just the kind of victims of this thing. And there was lots of people, you know, staggering around, trying to kind of come to terms with it, you know, walking around a bit like a ghost. And, you know, I think most artists are sort of struggle with kind of degrees of depression, you know, but it was a sort of devastating thing.
You left quite late, really, that whole area. So you must have seen this progression.
Yeah, it was really getting kind of destroyed. When I left, I was glad to leave. Actually, when it finally went.
Like, can you remember, say, like a period when sort of a lot of acne artists left, and maybe there was a few left when you was there. I mean, how did it kind of feel? Like, what period do you think?
Well, most of the people. I mean, I left with, you know, there were still people. It was a, you know, it ended with a bang with me in the end because you know, everybody I knew was kind of moving out or had moved out. There was this thing. I mean, Graham had been, you know, turfed out, and, you know, it was starting to get sort of ugly and uncomfortable, to say the least. And lots of things were starting to get really kind of difficult. People were putting barricades up along the road and things. But I'd gone before, you know, the police moved in and really started to kind of throw people out. There was a kind of second wave of people who hadn't been there very long, who just kind of moved in quickly to the, you know, the places in their sort of last gasp, really.
Squatting, do you mean?
Yeah, more or less, yes.
So you actually felt a kind of build-up with these barricades going up, and then you thought, what did you think?
I mean, I think I didn't have quite the emotional engagement with it as I think Graham and Ian Bourne and John Smith had.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
You know, they really did do work that was about the area and about loss and about memory. And, you know, they were addressing that. It was very affecting for them, but I've always been pretty sort of alienated. I've got better in my old age, but I was always sort of slightly detached and sort of walked about. You know, I could be almost anywhere. I was always always camping. You know, really.
Safest way to be.
Well, it was then. It's not something I would promote as a way of living.
You sort of did you actually feel maybe about protecting yourself? In that kind of way, do you think you might have felt, okay, I know this is happening, and...
Yeah, I think I did that with everything, though. Anything personal, I did that. You know, I ended up sort of wearing all the Christmas presents my aunt bought me, for you know, the hideous jumpers that they bought me, and I'd wear them sort of knowing they were hideous, but you know, that was it was a sort of no one else knew that kind of that I was wearing these things sort of ironically, you know, they were just jumpers, but that's how I approached lots of things. It was sort of slightly odd, slightly alienated behaviour. Sort of funny if you found out about it, but most people didn't.
Because even that description of you going to Goldsmiths with your briefcase and this chainsaw going off and these protesters in the background, you know, building in their tree huts, you know, there's a sort of bizarre thing about that, really. I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, that whole idea of play, in a way, that comes up in your work. I mean, do you think there was an element of that at Leighton at that time, or am I reading into it? Because you said, oh, the artists, we were just all like a bunch of children, in a way.
Yeah, well, that was our model. We had very little kind of responsibilities. We didn't have mortgages. We didn't have, you know, commitments that would have meant that we had to do something kind of sensible to earn money. You know, we were avoiding those kind of ties.
Mm.
And because we weren't having kids, there was no kind of new generation of kids that would define us as the, you know, as the older group. It's happening to us now,
yeah.
To our horror, of course. And but no, it's I think one of the things that does come up in my work a lot that is related to that time is a sort of sense of belonging or a slight kind of doubt about belonging.
Yeah.
You know, you're not quite sure whether these people live in this place or not, or occupy this place. They don't feel comfortable in this place.
And
it's quite
kind of dysfunctional as well.
Yes.
I don't know. Maybe I should not say that. But.
No. I think it's important to say that. But I think it's also important that they're not meant to be sort of literal pictures of social behaviour. So if you know, if you do think of it as behaviour, then it does become kind of just mad. But in a way, I quite like the idea of sort of, you know, constructing something kind of knowingly odd, that does something, that kind of says something about consciousness or something. It's much more kind of structural than that.
Mm.
So you can kind of infer what you like, but it's not meant to be sort of seen as actual people living with one another. But I quite like doing something where you're not quite sure of the nature of the minds of the people that you're looking at. That there's something kind of bit sort of animal about what they're doing, or but not in any kind of straightforward way.
Yeah,
you know, they're just not making the normal sort of facial expressions, or you know. So it kind of makes a space where you really are. You know, they're not confirming their status as part of your community, or you know, or part of your world. You know, you don't know where you stand with them. You don't know whether they're outsiders or, you know, they're part of your group or whatever. And I quite like that.
Mm.
You know, where you cannot empathise with these people. You know, you're not supposed to, and you're, you know.
That's really interesting.
But it is, I mean, yeah, you know, for me, it's a kind of, it is sculpture. So, you know, you have to work quite hard to work with real people and think of that group of people is something kind of sculptural, so you have to kind of sabotage their personalities and kind of the ordinary way of sort of relating to them in order to kind of find this kind of rather peculiar way of thinking about what's going on.
Mm. And then sort of like the people that you knew down there, you've mentioned Ian Bourne, John Smith and Cornelia Parker and Terry Smith. Were there any other artists that come to mind?
Well, there was lots of through Graham. There was sort of Impact Theatre, and I got to know those people really, I think, through Connie more. So there's
And they lived down
Pete
there.
Brooks and Joss Pook and various people. They were sort of living in and around that area. And I knew kind of Georgina Carlos as well.
What did Georgina do?
Georgina at the time. Now, what was she doing at the time? She was doing, I think, a theatre design course. She'd been at Goldsmiths and she'd done kind of various things, and she, you know, she had a very strong visual sense. So I think she was doing kind of bits of painting, bits of, you know, she was painting kind of backdrops and kind of theatres, and she had a kind of strong kind of design sense, good kind of colour sense. And I think she could, you know, she could have gone into interior design, could have gone, you know, in different areas. But I think in a way that was one of the kind of, you know, we all supported each other in being sort of artists, but actually it could work the other way. I think that you know, she could have gone into interior design or, you know, somewhere else, and I think she would have been maybe very happy in that area. But because we were all wanting to be sort of highfalutin mad sort of artists, she didn't feel that that was a noble thing to do. So, you know, it could work against people, I think. But she's, yeah, I mean, she's happy now. She's doing, you know, she's doing painting and things now.
Okay, so you're still in touch with
I see, you know, I see kind of one or two people. It's kind of odd, the people that I do see and the people I don't see. Before I moved in there, I was sharing a house with Terry Smith and John Wallett, and I mean Terry and I were sort of, you know, regarded, I think, as kind of mad twins. You know, we were pretty inseparable actually early on. And we could never understand why people would mistake us for each other. Quite often, you know, I would get called Terry and he would get called Gary, and we you know, we felt we were utterly different. We could not comprehend why it was that, but we were both kind of short, working class blokes who, you know, who kind of talk fast, and actually now it sort of makes sense. That people just sort of saw us as the same, sort of strangely.
I mean,
actually, it was funny living.
You've
in...
got the same colour hair. That's about.
Yes,
but well, maybe
I'm trying to understand it, but that's my way of understanding it. But actually, when I was living in Hackney, it's quite funny. Because you know, Terry's about sort of 5'4" and I'm 5'6". So we're both short blokes, but in Hackney, in the market, we were probably, you know, some of the taller people at that time when we were living there in the sort of late 1970s.
Yeah.
You know, there hadn't been much kind of mobility of people around the area, so the population was all pretty stunted.
Oh God.
Post-war, you know, working class people, you know, all pretty short. You know, we were doing well actually. 5'4", 5'6". And that, you know, what was interesting with this influx of artists and, you know, all of, you know, that, so, you know, did change quite quickly. But when I first moved in there, it was mainly a bit like Lilliput.
So, I mean, when you first moved into Leighton, I mean, did you feel like really excited by all the artists being there and being in a place?
Yes, but you know, I suppose that that's where I lived anyway. You know, that it was my whole life was about being an artist and being with artists. And you know, I was, you know, it was either in college or it was there. You know, I'd escaped Essex where there were no artists.
Are you from Essex originally?
Yes.
Oh, where?
Well, actually, curiously, my mother. Grew up in Leslie Road, which is one of the little roads off of Leighton Station.
So
very
really
close.
Close.
And my dad, curiously, came from just around the corner here.
Okay.
It's sort of accidental that I've moved back into these areas. It's just that they're kind of cheap areas to live in, so it just happens to be that.
And I just want to ask you as well, you around when John Smith was filming his house, or
yes.
Did you left by then, or did you go back? Or?
Yeah, no, I know, no, we would, you know, quite often, because we were sharing, you know, quite often John would come around and you know, we'd have these joint birthday parties. And
oh, yeah, of course.
So he was there, and, you know, we quite often saw, you know, he would see, we would see each other's work. You know, if we had shows, we would definitely kind of see each other's work. So, you know, he would have kind of, I don't know how I saw his films. There was sort of private screenings and different things going on that we got to see each other's work.
So did you, was you there when he was filming his house? Being knocked down, or
I think I'd gone at that point, okay. Or I was on the way. But I did, you know, I did see that film in and around there, and I helped him move out. Actually,
okay.
I helped him move into his new house. So, so you know, I was around, but I think I was probably in Moyers Road by then.
Mm.
I can't quite remember where I was. I think I'd left Philibrook at that point.
Do you think John was attached to his house?
Very. Yes, I mean, again, we're different, but there was a sort of thing where, that we could kind of look at the squalor and the state of the toilets, and then do a kind of amusing commentary on the, you know, the state as if it was sort of the surface of the moon or something.
You mean John's house?
John's house, and he did this kind of really funny film of, you know, of the house, and this kind of funny jokey
I've heard about this film
thing he did on his sister. Oh, you should definitely kind of see it.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's censored it now. He might. He's respectable.
He lingered quite long on his toilet, apparently. Is that the one?
Yes, but I think it kind of lit a light, or kind of, I don't know what it did. It played a tune or did something. Anyway, there was something kind of interesting about it. But you know, there was someone who was doing something that was kind of had a formal aspect. But in a kind of extraordinary sort of environment.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of combined these two things. Very nice.
I think that's it, actually. I'm just going to check. Oh, you weren't involved in the public inquiries or anything, but did you know anybody who was?
No, well, I think that not really. One of the things is we did know that they were earmarked for demolition, and when we took the places on, I felt that that generally the building more motorways was not the way to go, and that area has been absolutely ruined now.
Mm.
If you go down there now, it's really kind of sad. It's just cut off. It's an ugly. You know, nothing quite fits together anymore down there. It's horrible. But no, I wasn't part of it. I think that you know, most of the battles were kind of personal ones, really.
How do you mean?
Well, the things with someone like Graham, you know, where he was sort of really kind of battling with the kind of police, and you know, his treatment by the police. You know, he was really treated like a kind of criminal, really. And the fact that he was living there with a disabled child and, you know, struggling along and completely innocent of anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was part of his argument, that he hadn't actually. All he'd done was put this bloke up on his floor. And that was enough for him to be thought of as a kind of, you know, part of the protest group.
And it sounds like it kind of got really paranoid, you know, not like almost the authorities were getting really paranoid.
Well, it cost a fortune in the end, because, you know, they really didn't know quite what to do. I mean, it's kind of a difficult thing to do, just kind of evict people like that. But, you know, I felt that you know, I had agreed to the short life contract.
Mm.
So there wasn't a great deal to complain about, really.
No.
I mean, one can complain about motorways, but that was that. You know, that was it was a general complaint. It wasn't a kind of a local complaint.
Yeah. And where you lived, can you remember any local characters or anything?
No, I'm ashamed to say, not really. You know, I didn't.
I would
really
have thought you would somehow.
No, I didn't. No, but I, I'm pretty terrible at sort of having anything to do with anybody. I kind of keep my head down, sort of, horrible thing to confess, but that's kind of what I do.